What can grow out of darkness? What can life look like after being trafficked? And where does God fit into it all? Welcome to CWS Christian Writing and Speaking. I'm your host, Jackie Wilson. On this episode, we will answer these questions. Today's guest is an author publishing over a dozen books. She is a keynote speaker, an internationally recognized artist, a podcaster, wife, and a cat mom. Today, we will hear her story, what you can do to overcome, and how forgiveness is a key component to it all. Let's welcome to the CWS stage, Miss Amanda Blackwood. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you so much, Jackie. I gushed a little bit right before we started recording. I'm so excited I get to hang out with you today. This is like the highlight of my whole day.
I'm excited too, because I love that you're not stuck on what happened to you, but that you're bringing light to people's lives as a result of what happened to you. And your story is unique in that, you know, you went through the trauma of being trafficked. You come out of that, you start a new life, and you're in a career, and then it's brought back up again. And the people that should be supportive of you actually use it to hurt you, but you use it as a segue to do exactly what God was calling you to do. So it's a lot there to unwrap, but I want to start with something simple. What is your story? How did you find yourself being trafficked?
I thought you said you wanted to start with something simple. So all kidding aside, my story is very complex and frightening and relatable. With most survivors of human trafficking, we experience childhood trauma and abuse first. It's something that kind of sets us up to be more vulnerable to it later on. I grew up in an extremely abusive household. My father was in the military, so we moved around a lot, and we really did not have any extended family nearby for me to lean on. It was my dad, my mom, my brother, and myself, and that was it. That was the whole family. We moved around a lot. I constantly made and lost friends, and eventually I got to where I just didn't make any friends at all anymore because why bother? My mom was mentally and emotionally abusive. She also illegally put me on narcotics when I was 4. And had me legally prescribed to Ritalin when I was 5. My dad was physically abusive, and my brother was the first person to ever molest me when I was a kid. So when you grow up in this environment, you start learning the awful not truth that the people who hurt you are the people who love you the most. And vice versa. And if one does not exist without the other, that means neither can be true. If they don't hurt you, they don't love you. Simple as that. By the time I was 18, I'd been running away for 3 years. I was doing everything I could to be on my own and support myself and standing up in the face of my father, who said that my mother gave me 6 months to come crawling back to them. My dad told her that he gave me 3 months. I decided I wasn't ever going back, period. And I was willing to do whatever it took to stay out there and to stay on my own. And a lot of times that meant putting myself in really tricky situations. So the first time I was trafficked, I was over the age of 18. We have this preconceived idea for some reason here in the US that trafficking only happens to somebody who's under the age of 18. But in reality, that's only 1/4 of all victims. So 18 years old, the first time I was trafficked, and that was by a boyfriend that I had at the time. He loaned me out as a party favor to his best friend. When that event ended, I had been molested and raped repeatedly over a 52-hour span in another city. I left. I wasn't willing to stick around for something like that. What a lot of people don't realize is the world of trafficking and domestic violence are very similar in that the most dangerous point in time for somebody is when they leave. When I left, he hunted me for a while, for several years. But I kept on the move. I was moving from one place to another. When that happened, I was living in Arizona. I had been taken to Las Vegas, Nevada, and I left and went eventually to Florida. When I was in Florida, the plan there was to stay with my dad's mom, since I really didn't know any of my extended family very well. And I made it all the way there. And I called them at like 10:30 at night and told them that I made it. And, you know, would they come and get me from the bus station so that we could go to their house and I could get settled in before the knee surgery that I desperately needed. My dad's stepfather answered the phone and said, "We're not coming to get you. You're on your own. Good luck." And I was abandoned at a bus station at 10:30 at night in a city that I really didn't know, that I'd not really been to since I was four. And a young couple, he was in his early to mid 20s. She was 15, but she looked 18. They came and found me crying and asked me what was wrong. And I poured my soul out to these people. And they said, "Hey, we've got a place where you can come and stay. Come and stay with us." What they really meant was they had a place where I could stay until they found the highest bidder, because they sold me to a guy named Esteban within a couple of weeks. Mm. That time I was locked up for 23 and a half hours with no food, no water, no bathroom facilities. And for a long time, I figured that was the instance of human trafficking because I was essentially kidnapped. The first time that I had been trafficked, it was somebody that I knew. So I didn't equate that to being trafficking because, again, we have these ideas about what trafficking is, and we think it's people being kidnapped off the streets. But that's not it either. I grew up in the 80s. You know, I was born in the late 70s. I grew up in the 80s, and I loved watching MacGyver in the 80s and 90s. Richard Dean Anderson was my heartthrob. Other than Bing Crosby, I wanted to grow up and marry this man. I've seen everything he's ever been in. I absolutely adore the guy. Part of the reason that I love him so much now is because watching MacGyver so much as a kid, I knew how to get out of that situation, being locked up in that room. And I MacGyvered my way out. And I love that that word is actually in the dictionary now. So when I got out, I was really excited and happy and, you know, I'm going to embrace my life and I'm going to move on. I'm going to do great things. I'm going to be important. I was still putting my sense of value in the hands of other people. So I moved from Florida to California because that was as far away as I could get without either freezing to death or having a passport. And I went to Los Angeles. And my goal there was to become an executive assistant to somebody important, because that would mean vicariously, I was important. If they couldn't run their day-to-day operations without me, then I would finally be somebody. Uh-huh. I instead ended up in modeling and acting. It was on Alias and Will and Grace. I modeled for Harley Davidson. I did a bunch of really cool stuff when I was out there, all because I was still putting my sense of identity in the hands of other people. I didn't know who I was, and I was needing other people to tell me. The more I was in the public eye, the more they would praise me, the more I felt important. This is something we're seeing a lot of these days with social media too.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point here, is that if you don't have a sense of identity, people will tell you who you're supposed to be.
Right.
And
absolutely.
You get lost in the shuffle. So this is only a portion of your story. I know we could go deeper, but at what point did things change for you?
There was a massive shift after my third time being trafficked. So the third time I was trafficked, I was 31. I had gone to Scotland. I'd known the man for 7 years. And when I left there, it was barely with my life. I had gone through torture. I had been deprived of food, of sleep. I'd been waterboarded. I had been other people's entertainment for a long time. I felt like I was nobody. I was nothing. And when I got out of there, I was so, again, happy to be alive that I felt like I was ready to start making a shift. And I started making these changes. Mm-hmm. But that's when he attacked me. In 2019, he had taken all these photos and videos that he'd put up, that he'd taken during my trafficking, and he put them up on a pornography website and made me famous overnight. That was the big moment when things changed for me.
Yeah, it was from that moment. My understanding is that you were trying to find a way legally to get them to take down the videos.
Right. Yeah, I reached out to an anti-trafficking organization and they paired me up with a law firm in New York City that was going around and subpoenaing these people to have this stuff pulled off of the websites. But every time one went down, two more went up somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I was fighting this uphill battle and I knew it. And I did not want to really push through it anymore. I was done. I was tired. I felt like my whole life had been nothing but abuse and pain, and I just couldn't deal with it anymore. And I remember sitting down and praying and saying, God, I don't know how to get through this, and I don't know if I want to. Please do what it is that you're needing me to do, because I can't do it myself. And it was that prayer of absolute desperation that really, I think, got me moving. Mm-hmm. I finally got to another anti-trafficking organization that paired me up with a therapist. And I traumatized the therapist and they ended up giving me a second therapist. And it was quite the ordeal, but that second therapist was incredible. We went through some of the hardest stuff that anybody could ever imagine. Mm-hmm. But it was at that moment when he made me famous on that pornography website that I said, if people are going to be finding me and they're going to find out all about me and they're going to see this stuff about me anyway, they might as well know why. And that was when I started talking. That's when I started telling my story and saying, yes, that is me in those photos. Yes, that is me in those videos. But understand that what you're seeing is not pornography. What you're seeing is rape.
And I think you made another key point here, which is silence is the true killer. A lot of times we think if we keep quiet, that it'll all go away. But instead, it's almost as if we're contributing because we refuse to expose. And I know there's a risk in that because you expose yourself. But I love what you did, which was, I'm taking back my power. Yes, that is me. And let me tell you what's really happening, because then it starts to shift people's perspective.
Yeah. And that was huge. I mean, the first time that I said that I was a survivor of trafficking, I was terrified. I had no idea what to expect. And rather than having people, you know, shun me and turn away from me, because other people had done that before they found out that what it was that I'd been through was called trafficking, they thought that I was just telling stories of abuse. They didn't want to hear it. But when I said that I was a survivor of trafficking, people started asking me what happened. Oh my gosh, how can I identify with this? Why do I know what this is like? And I started to realize that there's a lot of other people out there too that don't even realize that what they've been through has a name. But naming it is the first step to healing from it.
Yeah. And not only have you start taking those steps to healing, but you also have worked on forgiving those people. Share with us what it was like to finally start saying, I will forgive this person for what they did to me.
It was weird. It was really weird. I had to figure out first what forgiveness was. I mean, if you and I were standing in an elevator and you turned around too quickly and your handbag smacked me in the hip, you would apologize for that. And I would say, oh, that's okay, because I would know that you didn't mean to do that. That's not forgiveness. That's a pardon. These are two completely different concepts. We can't look at forgiveness as saying that what somebody did is okay. It's not okay. Forgiveness is accepting an apology that you're never going to receive and saying, this anger is not going to rule my life anymore. This isn't a part of who I am now. You have no business in my life whatsoever. And that's all that anger is doing, is still giving them power over you. Forgiveness is saying, I'm letting go. I don't want to live my life there anymore. I'm done.
Yeah, I love it. And as you have worked on forgiveness, how has your relationship with God been?
Oh, it has grown in such beautiful ways. So I was the kid that ran away from home to go to church rather than the kids that would run away from home to skip going to church. I had felt God calling to me really early on. I always had. But I'd forgotten about that for a long, long time. And when I started working through the forgiveness, I started I did this thing where I would take my Bible and just randomly open it to a page and I would read a passage. Mm-hmm. Every single time I did that, it would have some relevance to what it was that I was feeling or thinking or doing that exact day. And if it wasn't relevant to what I was doing in that exact moment, it would become relevant later in the day. Mm. God was speaking to me through these small actions and through these big movements that were happening in my life. It was incredible.
I love it. I love it. It seems like, you know, we say this, but it really is true. God's grace carried you through all of this.
He made me strong enough to survive it. He gave me the grace to do it with dignity. He gave me the power to heal and to forgive and to understand that what I went through was not my fault. The abuse is never the fault of the abused. And now he's given me the strength to be able to reach out and start helping other people too. I never would have imagined this for my own life. I spent the first 40 years of my life in pain and misery. And now here it is 4 years later than that. And I am loved. I love the people in my life. I have these healthy relationships. I have healthy boundaries. Never knew that was a thing before. None of that would have been possible if God hadn't said, this is not your life. This mm-hmm. is what I have for you.
Yeah, I love it. Now, Amanda, I want to kind of put a preventative note here for people. What do you do to help your child, the young lady in your life, or even the young men or young boys in your life, not experience trafficking? We know that the setup for you was going through the abuse. So when I'm talking about preventative measures, you know, we can't always prevent what is going to happen to us. But what do we need to do when you start seeing someone who's exhibiting signs of abuse at home? Because ultimately, if that may not have happened, you may not have ended up in the situation that you're in. And then on the other side, I want to look at the post as to what steps do you take to heal after you have experienced this type of trauma.
So probably one of the biggest ways to help anybody to not end up in that world is to help them with their personal education. And I don't mean personal education as in math and science. I'm talking like educating them on who they are. They have an identity in Christ. If they find their identity in Christ, they're not going to be looking to other people for their identity. Mm. And they also need to understand, like I said, healthy boundaries. I have healthy boundaries now. What was that? If they don't understand what healthy boundaries are, they're going to fall for the red flags. They're going to fall for the bad boys. They're going to fall for the people who are manipulating them in some way. Now, whether it's an emotional abuse or manipulation or physical, the effects are the same. You know, you become more eager to please this person that's done these horrible things to you, because seeing them happy becomes your only objective in life. Mm. So education is key. We have to educate ourselves on what human trafficking is, but we also have to educate ourselves on what safety is.
Yeah, and I think especially within the church, because I feel like people feel like they're shielded if they're in church, and that's not necessarily true at all. There's a lot of things that go on in churches that should not go on in churches. And so I think sometimes people want to steer away from addressing those issues. But I feel like at the same time, it is your godly duty as a way of protecting people. The Bible talks about the wolves. We are to be like sheep, but we have to have that mentality where we're always watching and being aware so that these things are not happening and then taking us away from God. Because ultimately, it affects you spiritually, whether you realize it or not.
Absolutely. And we also have to notice that there's been some extremely dangerous people in history that have used the church for a mask of sorts. Yeah, there was a serial killer in the Midwest named BTK that used a church and was a pastor at a church. and use this as his cover so that he can continue doing terrible things. And it's not to say that everybody in church is going to be a horrible human being. No, most of them won't be. But you do have to be diligent, and you have to know to trust your instinct and to trust God. He's got you.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the post side of things, what is the first step after you realize that you have been trafficked or dealt with some type of trauma where you will need some serious help? What is the first step?
Not knowing what services are available to you is the same thing as not having those services available. We live in the age of the internet. Use the tools that you have at hand to be able to locate and find those services available. If you're not able to find the services that are available to get you the help that you need, reach out to somebody like me or to the Anti-Trafficking National Hotline. We can pair you up with services that would be available in your area, in your community. The only reason that these services exist is because these people desperately want to help. That's why they are created in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to ask for help. And people think that asking for help is a weakness. But if it was a weakness, why is it so hard to do?
Mm. It takes a lot of strength to ask for help.
Yes, it does.
I love it. I love it. Now, I know we're getting toward the end of your interview, but you're helping people in so many different ways. You are an artist. You have your podcast where you're actually interviewing other people who have experienced trauma, and you have your books. What for you is the most impactful way that you're helping people right now?
Well, my favorite way is through the books because I'm an introvert, but the most impactful is oddly one-on-one. So I do public speaking events, and almost every single time I do any kind of public speaking event, when I step down from the stage, I make sure that I schedule myself at least 2 hours because there's people that are going to want to talk to me about everything. Almost every single time, somebody will come up to me and say, I had no idea that what I went through was called human trafficking.
Mm.
That moment when somebody understands that what they went through was not their fault and has a name and can be healed from and can be let go of, that is not only most impactful to me, to give me this drive to continue doing this, but it's impactful for them because that's the moment they realize that they can get the help that they need. Their service is available to them. I love that moment.
And I think the overall message that you keep pushing out there is that you are not alone. And so many people feel like they are alone in this.
Absolutely. I did for a long time.
And then when you try to depend on the people who are supposed to help you, and they disappoint you. But one thing I know, and of course, being a Christian, so we know that ultimately we can always depend on God. Just as you cried out with your desperate prayer, God answered. He answered you, maybe in an unlikely way, but he answered you, and you were able to move forward in this. What's next for you, Amanda?
I'm hopeful that I'm going to be doing a whole lot more public speaking events. I do have a all-day webinar coming up in June that I'm really excited about. There's going to be a lot more details about that on my website as the day gets closer. And I have 3 more books coming out this year alone.
Wow. So just so many ways that you're impacting people's lives. But since you mentioned your website, please tell people how they can connect with you via social media.
So my website is growthfromdarkness.com because that's what we do. We grow from the darkness. And I'm really easy to reach there. There's a chat function. There is a contact form, all of that good stuff. My email address is listed on there. But if you want to just talk with me in public, I am far more active on Facebook than I probably should be. And I would probably write more than 3 books a year if I wasn't.
But thank you for sharing your information. Now, Amanda, as we wrap up, what is the one thing that you want to leave with the audience?
We've heard all of our lives that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but that's a lie. The man who came up with that phrase His name was Friedrich Nietzsche. He died in an insane asylum not too long after that. So he has a very tragic tale, very tragic story. But it's not what doesn't kill us that makes us stronger. It's not the abuse. It is not the abusers. It is not the past. It's not the pain that makes us stronger. It's God that makes us stronger. And he already had that strength in us. If you read Isaiah chapter 40, starting at verse 29, it says, he gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. Think about that when you feel like you're at your lowest point. Think about that when you're in so much pain and you are desperate. Pray that desperate prayer. And listen to the Lord when he answers you, even if it's not the answer you're expecting or wanting.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. CWS audience, you have heard her. So many golden nuggets here. But I want to emphasize these. First of all, you are not alone. No matter what people say, how they treat you, you are not alone as you experience this trauma. As you experience the aftermath of trauma, there are people who want to help you. You may just have to have some guidance as to who those people are. But overall, regardless of the people, God is there for you. And if you're finding yourself in a situation and you don't know what to do, it's time now to start calling out to God and having your eyes open to receive the help that you need. And it may not look the way that you want it to. It may not be in a place that you want it to be, but start today because you have so much more to your life. And as far as to other people, if you have not experienced trauma, all around us every day, there are people who are going through things. And we have a tendency of wanting to turn a blind eye, especially within the church sometimes, because we want to stay within our safe bubbles. God never called us to be safe. When you look at Jesus, his disciples, what they had to experience for the word of God to spread, there is going to be times that are just going to be difficult, simply going to be difficult, but it's a part of your calling. And it's time for us to wake up, pay attention. If you're seeing that something is not quite right, we don't want more children to be set up for these types of situations. But like I said, there are a lot of things that are happening and we are either trying to cover it up or want to turn a blind eye, like it's not happening, but we are hurting our children. We are hurting young adults and it's time to start speaking up and speaking out. That is our charge as children of God. We're saying we're children of God, but your actions will really show where you are in this. So if you see something, if you know something, if you have a concern about something, if you're not sure exactly what to do, pray about it and let God guide you. But don't sit back. Do not sit back and just allow things to happen and later on be like, oh, I thought something was going on, because there is a responsibility there as Christians. A lot of times it's not even about just giving people the word. Sometimes we have to meet those physical needs before they can even receive a word. And oftentimes we saw that in the Bible where Jesus met the physical needs so that people could receive the spiritual that they needed. So we have more work to do. Let's not sit back. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. And until next time, beautiful people, God bless.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe, share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Thanks again, and see you next time.